It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
I am Jim Dolan, and you are listening to the Radio Theater Channel's RTC Weekly Download, where we feature old-time radio, 1 hour of it, every week. Maybe an hour plus or minus a little bit. Well, today we'll start off with some science fiction. This is from the episode of Suspense from 1955. It's called Zero Hour.
And now, tonight's presentation of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Tonight, Suspense brings you a repeat performance of one of the most controversial plays ever presented over your radio. It is called Zero Hour by Ray Bradbury. Starring Miss Isa Ashdown, here is tonight's Suspense play, Zero Hour.
What a game. Such excitement they hadn't known in years. Mink talked earnestly to someone near the rose bush, though no one was there. Then the two little girls, shouting, laughing at each other. Such fun. Such tremulous joy. Mink ran into the house all dirt and sweat. For her few years, she was loud and strong and definite. And her mother, Mrs. Morris, peeling vegetables at the sink, watched with amusement as her daughter threw into a sack old pots and tools and things which were relegated to child play.
Oh, my goodness, Mink, what's going on?
Oh, the most exciting game ever, just ever.
Oh?
It's all right, I take these things, Mom.
Well, just don't dent them and it's all right.
Thanks, Mom, we won't. Bye.
All right, dear. Oh, what's the name of the game, dear?
Invasion.
Invasion?
Invasion. And in the garden now, a serious concentration. Mink with an assortment of pots, pans, and wrenches, forks, spoons. And her friend Anna, a little younger, tongue in teeth, taking notes on a pad.
This, this, and this. What's it say next?
Wait a minute, Mink.
Well, hurry up.
4, 9, 7, A, and B, and X.
4, 9, 7, A, and B, and X.
A fork and a string and a hexagonal.
A fork and a string and a hexagonal. What do we do next, Mr. Drill?
And then Mink talking to the rosebush again. And to her own satisfaction, at least, receiving some kind of answer which she relayed to Anna.
Triangle.
How do you spell it?
Oh, any old way. Doesn't matter. Now write beam.
I haven't got triangle yet.
Well, hurry. 0 hours by 5 o'clock. We haven't got all day.
Then time out from invasion for lunch. Mink bolted down the soup and coincidentally crammed a sandwich into her mouth.
Now you slow down, Mink. Whatever's waiting will wait a few minutes longer.
But I can't. Drill's waiting for me.
Drill? Well, that's a peculiar name. Is he a new boy in the neighborhood, dear?
He's new, all right.
Well, I don't think I've ever seen him. Which one is Drill?
Oh, he's just around. You'll make fun. Everybody makes fun. All the kids do.
Well, I don't think that's very nice. Is Drill shy?
Well, yes, in a way. I don't know. I gotta go now, Mama, if we're gonna have the invasion.
Now, you finish your milk, miss. Who's invading what?
Martians invading Earth from up there.
Oh, I see. And Drill's a Martian?
I think so. He's had a very hard time getting here.
I should imagine.
They couldn't figure out a way to attack Earth. How to get in or something. And Drill says they have to do it by surprise. And even get help from your enemy.
Oh, a fifth column, huh?
Uh-huh. And all this time they haven't been able to figure out how to attack until one day they thought of children.
Well, that was bright of them.
And they thought of how grown-ups are so busy, they never look under rose bushes or on lawns.
Oh, that's where Drill is now, under the rose bush?
Uh-huh, with all his friends, too. And there's something about kids under 11 with imagination. It's real funny to hear Drill talk.
Well, it must be. You better run along out if you want to have your invasion before dark. Oh, and bath tonight. School tomorrow, you know.
Drill says I won't have to take any more baths.
Oh, he does he?
And we can stay up till 10 o'clock.
Well, your friend Mr. Drill had better mind his P's and Q's, or I'm going to call up his
mother. That's just it. Drill says you're dangerous because you don't believe in Martians. Just like you think Drill's a kid. Well, he's not. And they're going to let us run the world when they get in. All of us kids. And I might even be queen.
Well, that's nice, dear. Now run along.
Mom?
What is it, dear?
Mom, when the invasion comes, we'll have to get rid of you and Daddy. But I'll be sure it won't hurt very much.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Hello?
Hello, Mary. How are things in New York?
Oh, Helen, how nice. Are you in town?
Oh, no, I'm in Danbury. I was just thinking of you and thought I'd call.
Oh, it's long distance, though. You shouldn't.
Oh, I can afford 3 minutes. How's Henry?
Fine. And Bill?
Oh, just fine. What about Mink?
Oh, wonderful. Noisier than ever. Oh, she's got a new game now. It's taken the place of hopscotch. Invasion.
Is she playing that, too?
Well, yes. Are yours?
Same thing. Some kind of geometric jacks, I suppose. Isn't it a scream? You know, all the kids their age are playing it up here. Timmy's got a crush on some guy named Drill. I think that's what it is.
Oh, it must be a new password. Mink likes him, too.
Well, I didn't know it got to New York. Word of mouth, I suppose. You know, kids. Funniest thing, I got a letter from my sister in Boston. She says her kids are playing it, too. It's just sweeping the country.
Well, I wonder where they learned it.
Don't ask me. All I know is what Timmy told me at lunch. 0 hours at 5 o'clock.
When?
Today. That's when the invasion's going to be. Oh, these kids and their imagination.
And they talked a little more. Schoolgirl friends. Casual woman talk. But Mrs. Morris was thoughtful. She was thinking of other things, of adults, of children with imagination, rose bushes, dimensions. She thought of how much she had forgotten about being a child. And she wondered about Mink and all the kids who were at that moment playing invasion.
A kiss for Mink.
I will, and to Bill and the kids.
Thanks. Bye.
Goodbye.
An hour drowsed by. It was 3 o'clock. There was an occasional hum inside the coolness of the house as a car passed outside. The street was lined with good, green, and peaceful trees. And all across the city, in other gardens, in other places, children under 11 were excitedly playing a game, talking to rose bushes and grass lawns, trees and shrubs. Even children in apartment houses, high in the air, conferring with potted plants, cactus and ivy. Mrs. Morris finished her housework and went to the kitchen.
Oh, hello, dear.
Hi, Mom. Can I have a glass of water?
Of course, I'll get it.
Pi r squared, 27, a over 56 to the 7th degree, x t 7.
What, dear?
Oh, nothing, Mom.
Well, here you are.
Thanks.
How are things going?
Huh?
The, invasion.
Oh, that.
Yes, that.
Almost finished. When everything's right, Drill said we should be ready on time.
5 o'clock?
That's right. How'd you know?
Helen called me from Danbury. She says that Timmy's playing it, too.
Hey, that's keen.
I guess all the kids are, aren't they?
No, not all of them. Not guys like Jimmy Wood and Bob Wilson. They're growing up and they make fun of us. They're worse than parents. They just won't believe in Drill. They're so smart just because they're growing up. You'd think they'd know better. They were little only a couple years ago. Well, we'll get rid of them first. Drill says it's okay to kill them first.
Mink, I don't like that kind of talk. Do you hear me? I don't like it at all.
Oh,
now,
Mom.
I mean it. You keep on that way and there'll be no more playing. You'll have to tell Anna to go home and you'll stay inside until bedtime.
I'm sorry.
Well, I should think so.
Thanks for the water, Mom.
Mink.
Yes, Ma?
What did those numbers mean?
What numbers?
Those numbers you were saying to yourself before.
Oh, that. They're the things we have to do to get Drill and his friends out. That's all.
Look, dear, why don't you and Anna go down to the drugstore and get some ice cream? You don't even have to use your allowance. I'll pay for it.
Haven't got time, Mom. Thanks.
Well, I'd never believe I'd hear you say that.
I gotta go now, Mom.
Oh, wait a minute. Mink, I want you to tell me the truth. What is this invasion silliness?
It isn't silly. It's just a game, that's all. Mom, we're just playing an invasion. Excuse me, I gotta get back now. I'll see you later.
It was a game called Invasion. Mrs. Morris's little girl, Mink, was playing it. So was Mink's friend, Anna, and all the other children under 11. It was called Invasion, and 0 hour was to be at 5 o'clock. Mrs. Morris was disturbed. She wasn't sure why, but there was something about parents shutting ears and eyes to what was happening. And because she was disturbed, she did something she didn't usually do. She called her husband at the office.
Hello, dear.
Oh, hello, Henry. I'm sorry to bother you, but Miss Maxson said you weren't busy.
Oh, not too. I should be able to get home early today. Everything all right?
Yes.
You all right?
I'm fine.
Mink?
Oh, she's... Henry?
What?
Oh, nothing. I just wanted to talk to you for a minute. That's all.
Listen, are you sure you're all right?
Oh, yes.
Mink been getting on your nerves?
Not really.
Well, you tell her to behave, or when I come home, she and I are going to have a talk. As a matter of fact, she's been a little fresh lately, and I don't think it's good.
Well, she's playing outside. She's fine.
Honey, is something wrong?
Why, no, I told you I was just thinking about you and wanted to talk, that's all. Nothing wrong with that.
Not a thing.
You go back to your work, dear. I'll see you soon.
All right.
What time do you think you'll be home?
Oh, about 5, maybe a little earlier.
5? Oh.
Hey, what? Come on, what?
Well, I was just thinking. Nothing, really. Just Mink and you and me. Goodbye, dear.
You are okay, aren't you?
Yes, I'm fine. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Another hour passed, and it was 4:30. The day began to wane. The sun lowered in the peaceful blue sky. Shadows lengthened on the green lawn. Outside it was quiet. The two little girls more intent than ever upon their endless movement of design and pattern with the implements before them. Mrs. Morris watched from the window, and she had never known Mink to have such powers of concentration. She had turned on the radio and sat drinking a cup of coffee and turned over her thoughts.
Children. Children. Children love and hate side by side. Sometimes children love you and hate you all in half a second. Strange children. Do they ever forget or forgive the whippings and the harsh, strict words of command? I wonder. I wonder. How can you forget or forgive those over and above you? Those tall, silly dictators. Those parents.
Mom!
Oh, what is it, dear?
Have we got a piece of lead pipe and a hammer?
Well, I don't know. They might be in the garage. What do you want them for?
We just need them.
Well, if you tell me what for, dear, maybe I can... Is something wrong?
Drill stuck halfway. If we could get him all the way through, it'd be easier. Then all the others could come through after him.
Well, can I help?
Thanks, Mom. I can fix it.
You better get through, Mink. I want you to take your bath before your father comes home.
All right.
Now, he's coming home early. And Mink! Mink!
Mink had disappeared behind the shrubs, and Mrs. Morris knew it was ridiculous to make an issue of it. Besides, what was the issue? Invasion? Drill? 0 hour? Unaccountably, a cool breeze came up, and although normally for that time of year it would have been a relief, Mrs. Morris felt a chill. She closed the window. Time passed. A curious, waiting silence came upon the street, deepening. Then from the living room, Mrs. Morris heard... "5 o'clock, zero hour. It had come, and now it had gone. But was the clock right? And Mrs. Morris, knowing how foolish it was, knowing it, went to the phone and dialed.
Silly. It's silly.
When you hear the tone, the time will be exactly 4:54 and 20 seconds.
And Mrs. Morris knew that it wasn't as silly as she had thought, because it wasn't 5 o'clock yet. Not zero hour yet. Then the car drove up into the driveway.
Hi, me. How's it going?
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Daddy.
Bye. Hi, Mr. Morris.
Got a kiss for your old man?
Haven't got time now, Daddy.
Well, that's a nice thing. What are you doing?
We're playing Invasion.
Oh, swell. Your mother in the house?
Uh-huh.
Okay, be good.
I will. There are in a few minutes, Daddy.
All right, I'll be ready.
Mrs. Morris heard him chuckle. Then his steps up the walk to the front door.
Mary?
I'm in the living room, dear.
Oh, hi. Our daughter didn't have time for a kiss. How about you?
A hard day?
Not particularly.
Would you like a cocktail?
Oh, you read my mind.
Martini?
Perfect. Anything exciting happened today?
No. Oh, Helen called.
Oh.
From Danbury. I told her she was crazy, but she just felt like calling.
Like you calling me this afternoon. Crazy, huh? Hey, what was that all about?
Well, I told you. I just wanted to.
Mm. Hey, incidentally, what's this new game the kids are playing? Invasion. That's a nice, depressing thought. Is she all right? Come to think of it, she looked kind of funny.
She's all right. What's the time, Henry?
A couple of minutes after 5. Why?
No, the clock's wrong. By your watch.
Oh, I've got 2 minutes, too. I'm probably slow. You got something on the stove?
No, I just wondered.
Honey. Hey. Look at me. What's the matter?
Nothing, really.
Now?
No, really.
Mink's been up to something.
No, of course
then
not.
What?
I guess I'm a little tired, upset, that's all.
You want to go out for dinner?
Oh, no, I've got a steak here.
I'll tell you what, I'll barbecue it. How'll that be?
Oh, fine. What was that?
What?
Well, I thought I heard something.
Well, I didn't.
I must have been imagining it.
Hey, you are jumpy. Why don't you have a drink? It'll do you good.
No, I don't want one. What's the time?
Mary, what is this? Now, I mean it. Something's wrong, and I want to know.
Oh, it's silly. It's so silly. I'm on edge, that's all.
Mary.
I am.
I don't like this. That kid's done something, hasn't she? I'm going to get her in.
No, Henry, please, don't. She hasn't. It's nothing at all. I just...
What's that?
I don't know.
Those kids haven't got anything dangerous out there, have they? I noticed a lot of junk lying around.
I thought it was a game. She wouldn't have done it herself. They made her do it.
What the devil?
Well, maybe you better go out and tell them to stop playing now. It's after 5. You tell Mink to put off the invasion until tomorrow. Tell her!
It is coming from outside. What are they up to? I'd better take a look. Mink! Mink! Good Lord! Bombs! Bombs! They're bombing!
No, it's upstairs. I know it is. In the attic. That's where it is.
Mary! Mary, it is not up there! Mary!
He ran after her, confused, not a little frightened. She seemed to know something.
In the attic.
Her mind had worked that quickly. Any excuse to get him away from the outside, to get him upstairs to the attic in time. And outside, there were more explosions, and they could hear the children screaming with delight.
It is not in the attic. It's outside. Mink's out there. What's the matter with you?
No, no. I'll show you. Hurry.
Mary.
Get inside quick. Now we're safe until tonight.
Are you crazy? Why did you throw that key away?
Oh, maybe we can sneak out later. Maybe we can escape.
For heaven's sake, the kid's out there. Do you want her to get killed?
Oh, you don't know. You don't. We've got to stay here. We've got to. It's horrible. We've got to. You've got to stay here with me.
At this point, I don't know how the devil I can get out. Where's that light cord?
Oh, be quiet. Please be quiet. They'll hear us. They'll find us. Oh, Henry, please.
Well, who's going to answer the telephone? There's that noise again. Oh. It's in this house. Mary, what is this? Mary, what's happening? You know, now answer me. Stop it, Mary, stop it. Somebody's downstairs. Who's down there? Who?
Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, hush. Please, please be quiet. They might go away. Please, please.
And between his wife's terror and the electric humming from below, Mr. Morris felt a great fear. They trembled together in silence in the attic. Mr. and Mrs. Morris, parents of the little girl. Then they heard steps coming up the stairs and a voice.
Mommy, Daddy, where are you?
And a queer, cold light became visible under the door crack. A strange odor and the alien sound of eagerness in Mink's voice was almost more than they could bear. Each wanted to scream. And another sound. And the attic lock melted. Mink. Mink, with bright little eyes and tousled hair, peered inside. And behind her, tall, wavering blue shadows. Frightful shadows.
Suspense, in which Miss Eza Ashdown starred in tonight's presentation of Zero Hour. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis. Tonight's script was written by Ray Bradbury and adapted by Mr. Ellis. The music was composed by Leith Stevens and Lucian Morowick and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear, Paula Winslow, Eve McVeigh, John Daner, and Beverly Hanley. Sound patterns were by Bill James and Ray Kemper. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Now it's time to get into our second program for this show, and it's going to be Tales of the Texas Rangers. So this is a police procedural. From 1952, this is called Stick Up.
Tales of the Texas Rangers, starring Joel McRae as Ranger Jace Pearson. Another authentic reenactment of a case transcribed from the files of the Texas Rangers. Names, dates, and places in the following story are fictitious for obvious reasons. The events themselves are a matter of record. And now, from the files of the Texas Rangers, the case called Stick Up.
It is early morning, September 6, 1938, the day after Labor Day. In a quiet little town of Avon, Texas, the last breakfast customer has just left Baker's Beanery. Owner Tom Baker, alone in the roadside cafe, stands behind the counter, washing dishes.
Why they're a-dying, Nellie started crying. He ain't going to two-time
me. Oh, howdy, General.
Howdy, boy. You're getting hard, ain't it?
Uh-huh.
I reckon I could give you a hand with them dishes in exchange for a bottle of shorty pop.
You're sure playing it safe.
What you mean?
I saw you watching through the window. You waited till I got down to this last plate before you come in with that proposition.
Oh, Charmy, eh?
Hmm.
You want me to fill the sugar bowls for you?
Already done that. Need some spuds peeled, though.
How many?
About a bushel.
Oh. Then I guess I'll have to pay in cash.
General, you're the biggest moocher in the whole state of Texas.
Well, I'll get a free one off you yet. Now, how about giving a cash customer some service, boy?
Just one thing first.
What's that?
You sure you got a nickel? I mean, you ain't going to finish the soda and then tell me you lost the money through a hole in your pocket.
You ain't never going to forget that, are you? Well, this time I got the money.
5 cents?
Well, I got 4 cents. I'll give you IOU for the other penny.
That's all right. I'll trust you. You'll be in a war hero and all that. What kind do you want?
What kind you got?
Oh, sarsaparilla, grape, orange, lime, cherry.
Hey, you got root beer?
Yep.
That's what I want.
All right. Here you are.
Hey, shove them straws down here, will you?
Sure you don't want me to drink it for you?
I can manage, thank you. Well, what are you waiting for, boy?
That's 4 cents, or do you want me to send you a bill at the end of the month?
Go on. Wait on that young fella that just come in.
Come on, let's see your money first. Be right there, mister.
All right.
Money crazy, that's all you are. That's one penny.
Yep.
Two.
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it's an Indian head penny. 1907.
Come on, hurry up.
Three. Now, that's funny. I'd have swore I had another penny.
Got another hole in your pocket?
Oh, I guess I just forgot to sew up the old.
How about it, mister? I'm in a hurry.
Coming. Want to see the menu?
No. Give me a pack of gum.
All right, what flavor?
Peppermint.
Hey, Tom. I got a glass with some ice in it.
You trying to bankrupt me or something? Here's your gum. That'll be a whole nickel. Thank you. 5 cents out of a quarter.
I'll take that folding money.
What? Put on that gun.
Just give me the money and hurry it up.
Hey, John.
Shut up, old man. Stay back.
Let me have that gun.
Let's go on.
Give me that gun. Stop. Come here, you. Stop. Stop or I'll shoot. Stop. Missed him, Tuck. I got the truck. General, you're bleeding. Oh, no.
Tom Baker notified the sheriff's office of the attempted robbery and killing. Sheriff Lon Gunther could not be reached immediately, and the assistance of the Texas Rangers was requested. Ranger Jace Pearson was assigned and arrived at the scene 10 minutes later. The sheriff arrived soon after, and he joined the ranger in questioning Mr. Baker.
Is the gun on the counter, Mr. Baker?
Yeah, that's it, Ranger. I was trying to get it away from the guy when it went off. I never should have done it. I should have just given him the money. The general might be alive right now if I had.
Now, there's no use figuring that way, Tom.
Well, it's...
You cover him up with those towels?
Yeah, I couldn't stand them people looking in at him.
Well, I know how you feel, Tom. All of us who knew him had a soft spot for the old boy.
You know, it's a funny thing. I never did know his real name.
Mm-hmm. How'd the killer escape?
In a truck. I fired at him a few times before he drove off.
You hit him?
I don't think so, but I know I put a couple holes in the back of the truck.
What kind was it?
Half-ton pickup, painted red.
Did you get the license number?
No, I didn't.
How about the make and year?
Well, I don't know the make, but I'd say it was about a 34 model.
Where was the truck parked?
Under the live oak over there. You can see through the window here. It's right over there.
Uh-huh.
And it was parked kind of catty-corner, so he had to jump in the right side.
Could you see into the cab?
No, I couldn't.
What'd the man look like?
Oh, about average height, dark hair, just an ordinary-looking guy.
How old?
His 20s, I'd say.
How was he dressed?
Denim pants and a black cowboy shirt with white piping, like tore his sleeve off when we was fighting.
We'll put out an all-points bulletin, Sheriff. You might not find it so easy to hide a red truck with bullet holes in it. While waiting for the JP to authorize the removal of the body, I put out an APB on the truck and the killer. The sheriff and I then drove Tom Baker down to the sheriff's office to get his statement and let him look over the mug files. About 2 hours later, we got a call from the highway patrol. They'd found the truck abandoned on Farm Road 107, about 25 miles east of Avon. The license tags were missing, but from the motor number, the highway patrol was able to get the owner's name. The truck belonged to a man named Ed Jaffe. He lived on a ranch about 7 miles from where the truck was found. The sheriff and I drove out to talk to him.
Jaffe must be working on shares here.
Why do you say that?
The place belongs to old man Robinson. He'd been living up at Fort Worth last couple of years. And... Jaffe ain't taking care of it the way he did. Howdy, ma'am. I'm Sheriff Gunther. This is Ranger Pearson. Is Ed Jaffe here?
Oh, did you find our truck?
Yes, ma'am.
Waiting, Martha.
A ranger and a sheriff. They found the truck.
They did.
Come on in, won't you?
Thanks.
I just got back from my sister's. Been there over Labor Day. And when Ed told me our truck was stolen, I was just sick about it.
Howdy, Ranger. Sheriff.
Howdy. Howdy.
You fellas sure work fast. Just reported that truck missing about a half hour ago.
Yeah?
Where'd you find it?
About 7 miles down the road.
Yeah, well, I can take the bus down and pick it up, I guess.
We'd like to ask you a few questions first.
Sure. What about?
Where was your truck stolen from?
Right outside the house. I'll show you where I had it parked. I'll be right back, Martha.
Well, let me know if you go over to get the truck.
Yeah, let you know, honey. I had it parked right over there by the corral.
You didn't know it was gone till 30 minutes ago, huh?
That's right.
Tell me, don't I know you from somewhere, Mr. Jaffe?
You got a good memory, Ranger. That was a long time ago, 4 years.
Over in Coleman County, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
Ranger Morgan brought you in, didn't he?
Yeah. What for? Oh, burglary. Knocked over a filling station and did 18 months in Huntsville. But I'm out of that racket for good.
Yeah?
Yeah, darn right, I'm ranching now. I ain't fixing to spend no more time at Huntsville.
I guess you wouldn't know, then, about your truck being used in a robbery and murder, would you?
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know anything like that.
You think it's just a coincidence?
Look, I made a mistake once and I paid for it. 18 months. Now, if my truck was used like you say, don't try to pin it on me just because I got a record.
The killing took place about 5 hours ago. How come you waited until half an hour ago to report your truck was stolen?
Because I didn't know it was gone till then. I wasn't here. Besides, why'd I call the cops if I was tied up in it?
To try to look innocent, maybe? That's been tried lots of times.
But I...
Where were you this morning?
I was with Will Hicks at his place about 3 miles from here.
All morning?
That's right. I was helping him shingle his roof. Look, you're just picking on me because I got a record.
If you're innocent, you got nothing to worry about.
Look, I couldn't have been mixed up in no crime if I was at Will's place. And I was there from 7 this morning till noon.
Yeah. Well, let's go talk to this friend of yours and see if your alibi holds up. That his house over there?
Yeah, it just turned down this dirt road.
There's somebody working on the roof, all right?
Sure, that's Will. I told you he was putting shingles on it. Don't you want me to come with you?
No, you stay here with the sheriff. Mr. Hicks?
Yeah.
Can you come down for a while? I want to talk to you.
Oh, just a minute. Get this roof finished. Say it's going to rain tonight. What can I do for you, Ranger?
You know where Jaffe was this morning?
Ed? Oh, why, sure. He's right here with me. Oh, say, what you doing over there in the car with the sheriff?
We've been talking to him. How long was he here this morning?
Oh, let's see. I drove over and got him about 7. He helped me on the roof till about noon, I guess.
Did you take him home then?
Yeah, he had to get started on his chores. Are you checking up about his pickup being stolen?
That's part of it.
Yeah, we saw it was missing as soon as we got over to his place.
Did Mr. Jaffe leave you at any time during the morning?
No, we were working together the whole time. You know, I'm surprised this isn't a ranger on just a car theft.
It's more than that, Mr. Hicks. Your friend's truck was used in a robbery and killing.
Killing?
Yeah. I'd like you to come down to the sheriff's office in Avon and make a written statement about Jaffe being here all morning.
Well, is that necessary?
I'm afraid so.
Well, say, Ranger, can I do that a little later, in about an hour? I'd like to get this roof finished if I can. The radio said we're going to have rain tonight.
That'll be all right, Mr. Hicks. We'll see you then. And thanks for your help.
That's okay.
What'd he tell you, Ranger?
He says you were here all right.
You going to take me home now?
Not yet. I want someone to take a look at you.
Who's that?
The man who saw the killer face to face. We drove Ed Jaffe into town and took him into the sheriff's office. We had Tom Baker look at him. He was positive Jaffe was not the killer. We had one of the sheriff's deputies drive Jaffe back to his ranch and proceeded to show Tom Baker more mugshots of every man picked up for robbery in the county within recent years. An hour later, Mr. Baker was still looking.
This one?
No. No. No.
How about this one, Mr. Baker?
Let me see. No, nothing like him.
Yeah, that's the last of this bunch.
I declare I'm bushed. Must have looked at 1,000 of these pictures.
And quite, but these are the most likely ones.
You mean you got more?
Thousands of them. We'll have to get them from Austin.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. They didn't tell me you were busy.
Come on in, Mr. Hicks. We're just about finished.
Sorry it took so long getting here.
That's okay. Mr. Hicks, this is Tom Baker.
Howdy.
Howdy. Ranger, is there anything else I can do for you now?
I guess you might as well go home and get some rest. You had a rough day. We'll call you just as soon as we get those other mug shots here.
All right. I am kind of done in. I'll be over at the beanery when you want me. So long.
So long, Tom. Bye, Mr. Baker.
Sit down, Mr. Hicks. We'll take your statement now.
Thanks. Ranger, I got to tell you something.
What is it?
That fella just left here. Is he the one who saw the killer?
Yeah.
Has he seen Ed?
Just a little while ago. He definitely cleared him, though.
Well, I'm sure glad to hear that. But I still got to tell you something.
What's on your mind, Mr. Hicks?
Well, it's hard for me to say this. I never lied to no officer of the law before. But I just thought I was doing Ed a favor and it wouldn't hurt nobody.
What do you mean?
Well, Ed come to me just before noon. You know, his wife was away.
Yeah.
And he said he'd been down here in town seeing some gal he knows. You know how some fellas are.
And what about it?
Well, he told me his pickup was really stolen in front of this gal's house. And he didn't want his wife to find out where he was. So he asked me to tell her or anybody else that he was with me all morning helping to fix my roof.
He wasn't with you?
No, sir. He wasn't.
Why didn't you tell me that before?
Well, when you told me it wasn't just a stolen truck, but a killing, why, I just didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sure puts a new light on things. In the first place, I don't think there was a woman.
Why do you say that, Jason?
Look, if his truck really was stolen in town, he'd have gone to your office and reported it. He wouldn't have mentioned who he was visiting.
Well, then why'd he tell me that story about a woman?
So you'd come to his rescue and say he was with you all morning?
Yeah, but now, Jace, if there was no woman, why would he want to use Hicks as an alibi?
Because maybe that truck of his wasn't stolen at all. Maybe he was driving it himself this morning.
Now, hold on, Jace. That mule won't pull. Baker said himself Jaffe wasn't the killer.
I know, Sheriff. But Baker saw only one man. That doesn't mean there wasn't another one waiting in the truck.
Come to think of it, he did say the killer climbed in on the right side.
And I got a feeling that on the left side was the driver, Ed Jaffe. Come on, Sheriff. We're going to pick him up. With Jaffe no longer having an alibi, the sheriff and I were pretty sure he could have been involved in the killing. We had the local magistrate issue a search warrant and headed out to Jaffe's place. It was about 5:30 in the afternoon when we pulled up in front of his house. Mrs. Jaffe heard our car approaching and came out to see who it was.
Howdy, Ranger. Sheriff.
Howdy, ma'am.
Jaffe.
How come you wouldn't let Ed bring the truck back?
We're afraid we have to hold it for a while, for evidence.
Your husband here, Mrs. Jaffe?
No, he's out moving the cows from the lower section up to the north range.
How long ago did he leave?
He took off just after he got back from town, about half an hour ago.
Is he on foot?
No, he saddled up the mare. You gents want to come in, wait for him?
No, thanks. I think we'll ride out and meet him.
Could I borrow one of your horses, ma'am?
Why, sure, Sheriff. Take that roan from the corral over there.
Thank you.
I'll get charcoal out of the trailer.
If you want to wait, I know it'll be back pretty soon.
I'm afraid the business we've got with your husband, ma'am, won't wait. The sheriff and I saddled up and took off across the fields in the direction Mrs. Jaffe had indicated. Ed Jaffe's tracks were easy to follow, but they did not lead to the lower section. Instead, they led to a dry wash about 4 miles from the house.
What in the world do you think Jaffe came down here for?
I don't know. Hey, wait a minute, Sheriff.
What is it, Jake?
A lot of cigarette butts over there.
Yeah. Plenty of foot tracks here, too. Well, they must have stayed here quite a spell, or he wouldn't smoke this many.
Not Jaffe, Sheriff. Someone else. Look at all these footprints. They were made by men wearing shoes, not boots like Jaffe.
Yeah. You think this other fellow could be the killer? Maybe hiding out here and Jaffe came to meet him?
I don't know. Jaffe met someone here, all right.
Yeah. Whoever it was, he sure must have been nervous. Darn near wore a rut in the dirt, pacing up and down.
Come here, Sheriff.
What is it, Jay? Find something else?
Yeah, black shirt. Spotted the edge of it sticking out from under the brush.
White piping and a torn sleeve. Like the one Baker said the killer wore.
I guess Jaffe brought him a change of clothing.
I wonder where they went.
We better find out before they get too far. There's the tracks Jaffe's horse made leaving here.
Yeah.
Hold still. Let's go, Charkey.
I don't see the other fellow's tracks, Jace.
They must be riding double with Jaffe.
That could slow him down some.
Uh-huh. Come on, Sheriff. Let's knock on it.
Yeah.
Hey, Jace.
Oh, Charkey. Oh, boy.
Jace. I saw Jaffe from up there. He was coming toward us.
Riding through the wash?
No, he's above it, coming this way.
Come on, Charkey.
Easy, boy. Easy. He was alone, Jace. Just coming over that rise.
Yeah.
There, see him?
Yeah. What's on the other side of the rise?
The highway?
That's probably where he's been. Come on.
Come on, boy. Look, he's turning around, Jace.
Jaffe, hold up!
He doesn't hear you.
He'll hear this. He heard that, all right.
Yeah, he sure did.
Go to the Bay Ranger!
You know darn well we were, Jaffe.
Oh, boy.
Why'd you run?
I didn't hear you, honest. Not until I heard those shots. What's the matter?
Where's the man you met back there in that wash?
Man? What man? I don't know what you're talking about.
I just bet you don't.
Where you been?
I've just been up the store.
Yeah? You sure you weren't taking your pal to the highway?
No, I just went to the store for a bottle of beer.
Come on, Jaffe. We're going back to that highway. The sheriff and I took Jaffe back to the highway. There was no sign of the other man. We went to the nearby store. The owner told us Jaffe had not been in all day. We then drove Jaffe into town and began questioning him. He kept insisting he was innocent.
Why do we have to go over the whole thing again, Ranger? I tell you, it's all a big mistake of some kind.
No use lying anymore, Jaffe. We followed your tracks and found that shirt on your property.
I never saw that shirt before. Look, Ranger, just because I got a record, that don't mean I mixed up nothing.
Then why'd you lie about where you were this morning?
All right, I tell you. I was with a woman. I didn't want my wife to know when I...
What's her name?
I don't remember. I don't know her too well.
Where's she live?
I don't know the name of the street.
That story is no good, Jaffe.
What do you mean? You think I'm lying?
Yes.
Well, I ain't. You got no right to say that.
Now, listen to me, Jaffe. We know you spun that yarn to Hicks about a woman, so he'd give you an alibi for this morning. But you weren't with a woman, and you weren't with Hicks.
Yeah, well, where was I?
I'll tell you where you were. You were in your pickup truck. It wasn't stolen. You were driving it.
No, I wasn't.
You had this other fellow with you, the one wearing the black shirt. And the two of you stopped at Baker's Cafe.
No.
You kept the motor running while he went in.
I wasn't there, I tell you.
You're an accomplice. You're as guilty as if you pulled the trigger yourself.
Now, wait a minute. Look, suppose I was there. I was outside. I didn't tell him to go in there and knock over the place.
That's something you're going to have to prove in court. But if you don't tell us who the other fella is, you're going to stand this murder rap alone. They'll throw the book at you. You think I'm kidding? Then who is he? What's his name?
Cal Martin. I met him about a month ago in Tipton. Just a punk. Works behind the soda fountain in the bowling alley over there.
Does he have a record?
He don't have nothing, including brains. He's just driving along, and he said he wanted to stop at Baker's place and get a drink of water. Said he was thirsty. So I stopped. Didn't know he had a gun on him.
After the old man was killed, what'd you do then?
Oh, we ditched the truck where you found it and hiked over toward my place. I told Martin to stay in that wash and keep out of sight till it got dark. Then I went over to Will Hicks and asked him to say I was with him.
Right after that, you called the highway patrol to report your truck was stolen.
Yeah. This afternoon, I took Martin one of my old shirts so we could get rid of that black one. Darn thing stood out like a sore thumb.
Where'd you take him?
Over at the highway. Flagged down a bus going toward Tipton.
Is that where he lives?
Yeah. We said he was going to pack and try to make it down to Mexico.
Let's get over to Tipton, Sheriff. Maybe if we hurry, we can change his plans. The sheriff booked Ed Jaffe immediately, and the two of us took off for Tipton. We arrived there about 9:30 that night.
Reckon he's still here, Jay?
Could be. I phoned the bus station while you were getting the warrant. No bus leaving here till midnight. He's probably waiting in his room rather than go out in the street.
There's room, too.
There's a light under the door. Guess he's still here.
Hear anything?
No.
Sounds like he's in there, Jase.
Open up, Martin. It's locked. You better cover me, Sheriff, while I break it in.
Hell, he's gone.
Take a look in that closet.
Okay, Jase. Not in here, Jase.
I guess he...
What's the matter?
Shh. He's outside on the ledge next to the window. I saw the edge of his jeans.
What? Well, let's get him. No.
My jumper fall. Well, I guess he's already skipped, Sheriff.
Yeah, I guess he has, Jase.
Let's go.
All right.
There we'll go down and try the bus station.
That's a good idea.
I have to get this door fixed tomorrow.
Yeah, we sure will.
Let's keep walking down the hall.
You think he'll come back in the room now?
He will if he fell for our little act. You go on downstairs and outside. He might get scared and jump anyhow.
Are you going back and wait for the door?
Yeah, keep going so he can hear your steps going down.
Okay, but you watch yourself, Jase. Right.
All right, you got me. What do you want me for, anyway?
For killing an old man in Avon this morning?
I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't
know. No use, Martin. Jaffe told us the whole story.
No, I don't believe it.
Well, he did.
Jase, you all right?
Yeah, everything's under control, Sheriff. You better put your cuffs on.
Yeah. Come on, you put your hands up.
Look, I didn't mean to shoot anybody. It was an accident.
Afraid the law looks at it a little different, son. When you rob a place with a gun, it's never an accident.
And now, here are the results of the case you have just heard.
Cal Martin and Ed Jaffe were charged with armed robbery and murder with malice. Jaffe was sent to the retrieve unit of the state penal system to serve a 30-year sentence. On February 9, 1939, Cal Martin was sentenced to 32 years at the state penitentiary in Huntsville.
Next week, Joel McRae in another authentic reenactment of a case from the files of the Texas Rangers. McRae is currently seen in San Francisco Story, a Warner Brothers release. The cast included Tony Barrett, Tom Tully, Leroy Leonard, Parley Bear, Junie Ellis, and Lamont Johnson. Technical advisor was Captain M.T. Lone Wolf Gonzalez of the Texas Rangers. This story was transcribed and adapted by Bernard Editor and Robert A. White, and the program was produced and directed by Stacy Keach. Tales of the Texas Rangers is heard each week overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Hal Gibney speaking.
Well, because our shows were a little bit on the short side, we have a little extra time, so we're going to give you a chance to listen to a daytime program that's 14 minutes long. It's called Can You Imagine That? And it's called Clam Chowder. This is from sometime in the 1940s.
Chowder is not an American dish,
but baseball is an American game.
You can find a famous popular song in Nicolai's opera, The Merry Wives of Windsor.
Can you imagine that? This is Lindsay McCary, back with you once more to spread the good tidings that things are not what they seem. Yes, friends, we're going to present a series of odd facts and unusual news stories in just a moment or two, so stay with us. Here we are, and here's our first tidbit of oddology. It's another of our origin of words. When you dig into a steaming bowl of Boston or Coney Island clam chowder, you probably think that you're partaking of a genuine American dish, or maybe that it might have come over on the Mayflower. But you're wrong. Yes, sir. Chowder was originated by the fisher folk of Brittany on the coast of France. All the villagers used to bring their contributions for the common cauldron, to which, of course, various kinds of fish and bivalves were added. The name of the cauldron itself gave the dish its name. C-H-A-U-D-I-E-R-E, chaudière. And when the early American settlers learned to concoct this robust delicacy, they called it as best they could, chowder. Can you imagine that? Well, how well do you know your Bible? Do you remember this passage?
For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place, with him also that is of a contrite and humble spirit, to receive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones.
That is the 15th verse of the 57th chapter of the book of the prophet Isaiah. And within that brief quotation, the word eternity is used the only time in the entire Bible. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity. Yes, the word eternity is used only once in both the Old and New Testaments. Can you imagine that? You know, every once in a while, a sympathetic reporter will pick up a news yarn that is bound to warm the hearts of those who read and run. Here's a quaint touch to the annals of coincidence. It began in Cambridge, Ohio, on September 6, 1938. Truck driver Edward Rohr was preparing to make his daily run when his wife rushed to him from another part of their room.
Ann!
Oh, what's the matter, dear?
Look, a note from Eugene. He's run away.
What? Let me see this. Because I don't want to go to school.
Where could he have gone? Why did he go? Oh, my poor boy. Ed, what in the world will he do? He's only 16 years old.
Well, he'll come back soon, honey. Yeah, of course he will. Oh, he'll get tired pretty soon. He'll come on back home, maybe tomorrow. Oh, don't cry, honey. Gene will be all right. He'll come back.
But 16-year-old Eugene Rohr didn't come back. For 4 days and four nights, Edward Rohr and his wife sat in dismal silence, waiting for some word from the boy who had left home because he didn't want to go to school. But Ed Rohr couldn't lay off from his work. He must still go on earning the family's income. So on the night of September 10th, as he headed homeward on the dark highway, he thought sadly of his runaway son. On one lonely stretch of the winding ribbon of pavement, the headlights of his truck picked out the shabby figure of a thumbing hitchhiker. Ed Rohr thought again of his son somewhere in America. Probably thumbing his way along some unknown highway, just as this lad was doing. Ed Rohr pulled his truck up to an idling stop.
You going into Cambridge?
Sure, hop in.
Golly.
Gene.
Hello, Pa.
Gene, what do you know about that? Say, where have you been? What was the idea of running away like that? Don't you know you've had your mother and me worried to death for the last 4 days?
Don't ask me any questions, Pa. Just, well, take me home, will you?
Yeah, sure I will. Gosh, but your ma'll be glad to see you.
And Ed Rohr took his son back home. Maybe the myriads of unexpressed prayers in that mother's heart had nothing to do with the father picking up his own boy on that lonely black highway that night. Maybe it was just a coincidence. But on the other hand, maybe not. Who knows?
Play ball!
Play ball, the watchword of the great American game, baseball. But is it the great American game? Well, let's see. When the early settlers in America came to the New World, they brought with them two ancient English games, cricket and rounders. From these games, young boys developed a sort of embryonic forerunner of baseball in which the teams, composed of a catcher and a pitcher, took turns at hitting the ball. The team hitting the ball the greater number of times and a specified number of tries at bat was declared the winner. In 1839, a group of young men in Cooperstown, New York, assembled for a session of this rather crudely organized sport. Among them was a young fellow named Abner Doubleday.
Wait, boys, I have an idea.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, we've been playing this rather silly game for some time.
Silly? Why, Abner, I thought you enjoyed it.
Well, I do, Alex. Or rather, I did enjoy it, but I think I found a better game.
Oh, yeah? What do you mean?
Well, here's the way it goes. Look, I fetched this flat slab of stone with me.
Well, what's that for?
Well, my idea is to place this stone about 50 feet away from where we stand to hit the ball. And after we make a hit, we'll run for the stone. And then the pitcher or catcher can try to touch the runner or throw the ball at him and try to hit him with the ball. And if the runner is touched by the pitcher or catcher or hit by the ball, his team is out. And the other team tries the same procedure. Well, what do you think of it?
Well, what'll we call this stone? It doesn't sound right to call it just a stone or a slab.
Oh, I've thought of that, too. Let's call it a base.
Base, that's okay.
And so, this 20-year-old lad can be credited with the origin of the great American game. Originally, the game was called One Old Cat. Then, when two bases were included, it was called Two Old Cat. Finally, when a friend of Abner Doubleday, Alexander Cartwright, a student of draftsmanship, became dissatisfied with the haphazard placing of the bases, he laid out what he called a baseball square, placing all bases 90 feet apart. And to this day, that is the exact measurement of the official baseball diamond. I think you'll find it interesting, too, that Abner Doubleday can be credited with two firsts in history. Not only did he create the game of baseball, but as a graduate of West Point, he found himself second in command of Fort Sumter at the outset of the American Civil War and distinguished himself as the man who fired the first shot in its defense in 1861. Today, the plot of ground where Abner Doubleday and his teammates first played baseball in Cooperstown, New York, is called Doubleday Field. So I imagine it's still proper to call baseball a great American game. Say, do you have any idea what the word kangaroo, K-A-N-G-A-R-O-O, means?
Well, that's silly, Lindsay. It's the name of an animal.
Well, quite right. It is now, but do you know what it means?
I don't understand.
And that's right. The little girl is correct. And your old Professor Quizzlepuss awards her the handsome first prize of a last week's map of the world.
Say, what is this? Come on, Lindsay. What's this all about?
Well, all right. I'll break down and tell you. You were absolutely right when you said the meaning of the word kangaroo is, I don't understand. It was in 1770 when Captain James Cook, the noted explorer, was traveling through Australia that he first saw one of the peculiar native animals, the female of which carries her young around in a pouch. He turned to one of the native men in his party and asked him what the name of the animal was. The native replied, kangaroo, which actually means, I don't understand. Poor Captain Cook thought it was the name of the animal, and it has remained the name of the animal as far as we're concerned ever since. Can you imagine that? Well, now, I guess it's about time for our musical oddity for this session. You know, it often happens that the composer of a modern popular song will inadvertently set down a melody that is quite reminiscent of an older piece of music, often from the classics. I want you to listen as the orchestra plays just a few bars from Otto Nicolai's famous opera, The Merry Wives of Windsor. I wonder whether or not you picked out from that little melody the foundation for one of our best-beloved popular ballads of a few years back. You want another try? Okay, listen again. Not yet? Well, all right then, listen to this.
Marquita, Marquita, I still hear you calling me back to your arms once again. I still feel the spell of your last kiss upon me. Since then life has been all in vain.
That was Marquita, composed by that able veteran of motion pictures, Victor Schertzinger. And the melodic pattern of that breezy little passage from The Merry Wives of Windsor and the first part of the melody of Marquita are identical. Can you imagine that? Well, it's time to close our book of oddities again, but we'll be back soon once more on this same station with another edition of Can You Imagine That? Until then, this is Lindsay McCurry saying goodbye now.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.